News Radio WJPF, Southern Illinois's number one for news and talk. Terry Bryant's on the other end of the line this morning. Terry, how are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm on coffee cup number two, so I'm probably all jacked up.
Yeah, good. That's the way I like it. Hey, I hardly know where to start, so I think I'm going to start back a little bit so I can catch up to what the subjects are now. It was either last week or the week before, a question came in on the American Mail text line about IDS and them getting their, you know, this debit card, and they didn't know what to do. You know, they said, I was out of my job in June. I've got this thing that says I'm updating unemployment benefits. I mean, I got a ton of response after talking about the air. And so many people have gotten this and are confused and a little concerned about what's happening to their accounts, possibly, but somebody's getting their unemployment. Well, you saw somebody was caught trying to grab the mail out of a mailbox in Carbondale for this.
Right. Well, I just read an article this morning on Politico, and I'm just picking on that one because it's the one I read this morning. But there are a lot of local ones, too. So a lady in Chicago just got a letter from IDES with basically a bill that says that she owes $31,000 because she fraudulently claimed unemployment. And the issue is that she claimed unemployment back in January legally, and then recently someone claimed unemployment again under her name. She thinks they have the two confused. So we have multiple issues going on. One issue is those with the PUA system who claimed, I think, gross income, and they should have claimed net income. And so they actually may have to pay some money back. But then in addition to that, you've got the breach of the PUA system. So there's that going on, which, you know, that's the story we broke back in, I think it was June, that the governor's office still won't own up to for how large that breach was. Then in addition to that, we've got some really nefarious characters from all over the country who are having fraudulent claims. I have one business in Waterloo who's had five claims against individuals who have never stopped working there. In fact, one of them's been working there 30 years. And so now what we're seeing is people who are getting notices from IDES that are basically being told that you have to pay this money back, but they never made the claim. Right. It was a fraudulent claim.
So I think my takeaway from that story, Terry, is that if you get one of these letters at home, don't ignore them. Go to the IDES. They have a fraud website. I know people who have done this under the exact circumstances that you and I have talked about and got this thing fixed, but you've got to go to the IDES and not think that they'll just figure it out on their own. You have to report this fraud when it comes to you and your mailbox.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, don't get frustrated because you're not going to get a human on the phone. You're going to go into the queue. I also recommend that once you get, you know, make your report on the fraud line, also call the sheriff's department or your local PD and try to make a report. Some of them will take the report, some won't. And then call your state legislator or senator, whoever it happens to be, and make a report with them. You're welcome to call my office, even if you're not my constituent. It's 618-684-1100. Kathy will also put you in the queue. So you'll be in the queue on the fraud line yourself, and then we'll also help you get in the queue. And then if you don't get a call back, please let us know. IDES, the new director, the other day kind of bragged about the fact that it's taking one to 2 weeks to get a call back from somebody. That's no different than it was back in June. It's just a matter of how it spun. Back then we were saying, oh my gosh, it takes 7 to 10 days to 14 days to get a call back. Now they're saying it in a really positive way. Hey, get in the queue. We'll give you a call back within 7 to 14 days. You know, like that's a real positive thing. So they haven't made a lot of progress on getting people called back.
Now, there's two other stories that are percolating out there, and I'm really three that I'm thinking about right now. I spoke to Jim Durkin, House Republican leader, earlier this morning. We were talking about the failure of passage on the Fair Tax Amendment, and that at this point, you know, increase in taxes and comments that were published by Illinois Policy Institute about Speaker Madigan speaking with, I think it was the Black Caucus, saying, I'm ready to support and I can get a tax increase passed for the state.
Right. Well, let's remember that, you know, in caucuses, it's expected that that's not being recorded or even talked about after, you know, when you break in those separate caucuses. So I'm sure Speaker Madigan didn't expect that someone was going to be recording that and then talking to the media. So I think that that's very telling that he's speaking about that in private, and now he's been exposed for what his plans really are going forward. You know, I took a lot of heat for the income tax increase that went with the budget, you know, ending the budget impasse. The fact was that at that point, there was nothing else that we could do. But we now have the revenue to actually function as a government to keep us out of junk bond status and so forth. And I think the people of Illinois spoke very loudly when, in a bipartisan way, they absolutely and completely defeated the progressive income tax move. So for someone now to turn around and say that they want to approve another tax increase is criminal. You know, so I think at this point we need to remember that we have the revenue to function. There's a call right now by President Harmon and by Governor Pritzker that says, "Oh, will Republicans come to the table then with what your cuts are?" No, that is I'm calling BS on that, because there was not one Republican that voted for the budget that we're in right now that's creating this mess. And the fact is that there was an increase in spending of about $5 billion. So those who increased spending and started new programs, which was not the Republican side of the aisle, now needs to go back and take a look at what they increased and the new programs they started. And that's where we start with the cuts. The other two places to start with cuts, if they want a Republican to tell them where to cut, how about the fact that we're spending 100%, we're paying 100% for elective abortions in Illinois. That's something that people don't really understand. Even those who are pro-choice don't always believe that we as taxpayers should be paying 100% of that. We don't get the 50% match from the federal government because the Hyde Amendment says you can't spend federal dollars on abortion. The other place is January 1, we will begin allowing for undocumented immigrants to get Medicaid. So there's two places right there. 100% paid for abortions and Medicaid for undocumented immigrants.
All right. Now, the push here for a recall mechanism as well. Now, a representative and a senator both having a press conference earlier this week. Now, we do have one for the governor, but what about recalling the speaker, the auditor, or on the list goes the president of the Senate? Appointments in recalling them as well. A change in the Constitution to allow recall.
Well, I think that that's not a bad idea. Obviously, the response from people generally is, well, there's an election in, and you fill in the blank, whether it's 2 years or 4 years, whatever. But when someone is doing the kinds of things that we are seeing with Speaker Madigan, 2 years can be an eternity. And, you know, in the case of someone who has a four-year appointment or who has been elected for a four-year term, very often we find out that they've done something that is nefarious. And you can go through the impeachment process, but it's very difficult. Sometimes a recall process is much easier and it's more fair to the constituents of the state or the district that's in question.
It's weird because I'm getting so many questions that are coming in, comments about what we're talking about this morning. It's getting hard for me to catch up. Now, here's one coming in saying, I got that fraud claim notice and a debit card IDS needs to be investigated for such poor handling of sensitive information. So thanks for that note coming in from down the Canada this morning. Now, here's another issue for you. The FOID and the concealed carry license. Now, this morning, my understanding, there's going to be a Zoom press conference starting at noon saying, demanding answers from the Pritzker administration on continued FOID and CCL delays. And that has been backing up record gun sales.
Yeah, I had a call yesterday with Director Brendan Kelly. It was a very good conversation. He has some proposed legislation that I think he's hoping to get through in the lame duck session that would resolve some of the backlog. Because of all the rioting that's been going on and the pandemic where, you know, people are unsure about what's going to happen, there have been record sales in guns. And that's a fact. Now, the backlog of FOID cards, at first, I think there was a pretty good explanation that CCL all came due at the same time that people were, you know, everybody's CCL came due at the same time because we're at the 5-year mark. But the FOID card issue is an ongoing problem. I am not one that believes that the FOID card is constitutional. I'd like to see us do away with it. But until we're able to do away with it, I think that there are some changes that can be made. And Brendan Kelly was talking to him about those yesterday. One of them is that if you get your CCL, he would like to be able to automatically renew your FOID card. If you've got your CCL, why wouldn't you reset the time on your FOID card? You've just done the background checks and all of that stuff. Also, if you go and purchase a new firearm, there's a background check being done on you. All the things that would be done for FOID is done at that time. Why would you not reset the clock on the FOID issue as well? Now, the issue I think that's going to come up is there are some individuals who are not Second Amendment supporters who like to see the FOID card fund different areas, and so they're going to push back really hard. They're going to use the excuse that, you know, they want gun control, but the reality is there's a lot of things that are funded by FOID card money, and so don't let them deceive us into thinking that they really care about legitimate gun control, and the fact is it's not their place to control those issues. It's already spelled out in the Constitution that we have a right to bear arms for personal protection as well as for hunting.
Terry, I'm curious about something here. How much money has been taken out of that FOID background check fund? I read some numbers, and they're a little foggy, but I remember being stunned by how large it was.
Well, I think there's two funds, and I'm shooting from the hip here, but I believe one of them was $6 million, one was $7 million. That is not a problem. That's not part of the issue at this point. Those are being funded right now, according to the director. Those are being funded right now. They actually are hiring new people to process the FOID and the CCL. I think part of the problem is that the rules for how this is administered goes back to like the 1960s. And so we need to really update the systems, and we also need to update how we address these things. Some of it can be addressed very easily through JCAR, so it doesn't necessarily have to have legislation, but we need to take the handcuffs, if you will, off the state police and allow them to make some real common sense reforms that make it much easier for the FOIDs to be renewed, for CCLs to go through, and allows those who are selling firearms to be able to do it in a safe way, but, you know, you don't have the backlog. We've got people, you know, you should be able to get that turnaround. It's supposed to be done in 72 hours when you go buy a firearm. But sometimes it's taking up to 2 weeks. And even the ones with the 2 weeks sometimes take a call from my office to the state police and say, what's the holdup on this firearm? Right. And then pretty quickly those start to move. But a person shouldn't have to call my office to get a firearm that should have been approved 2 weeks earlier.
Yeah. We got messages coming here from Joe who says FOID cards are unconstitutional. Of course, federally, I guess they are. And of course, some question about the state of Illinois. But of course, there was a change in the Illinois Constitution of gun ownership subject to the police powers, I believe is the phrase, which is something that people are texting in about. Now, we've talked about Illinois Department of Employment Security fraud and personal information being leaked, a recall mechanism for people who are not doing their jobs and get them out of appointed and elected positions outside the governor's office. We've got this question about FOID and CCL. We've got the budget to worry about. I think when you look at this as an umbrella issue, these are my shopping list for today with you. I look at this mm-hmm. under the umbrella of time to go back to session in Springfield. That answers a host of these ills and these questions, doesn't it?
Well, I think it does. I think my understanding is that the Democrats have reserved the Bank of Springfield building that'll be for the House to go in from January 4th to January 14th is what I was told. Because remember that inauguration is on January the 13th. So it looks like there'll be a lame duck session and that they're planning for the lame duck session. My concern is when you go back for lame duck, are they going to try to push through a tax increase using those lame ducks who really, you know, have no political, there's nothing that would keep them from doing that. Will they have the votes to do it? Maybe. But there, you know, there aren't the same consequences in a lame duck session, and that's how they pushed it through back in, like, I think it was 2011 or so. So people need to be really be watching this, and again, remember that it is possible to make the cuts that need to be made if they would just have stayed with the budget from the 2019 fiscal year and not expanded on that, we would be in a much better place than we are right now and could meet that budget. But instead, for this fiscal year, they expanded programs and added new things in, like Medicaid for undocumented immigrants. And there are a lot of things that, you know, every legislator has a wish list because their constituents have talked to them about it. But, you know, there's a time when you tighten your belt and you say, okay, no one gets to have their wants. Right now we have to fulfill needs. And needs, I think, were more than met with the 2019 fiscal year budget, and we should go back to those numbers.
Will Mike Madigan be reelected Speaker of the House?
I don't think so. I don't know at this point how he cobbles together the 60 votes that he needs. And, you know, in addition to that, and there are some scenarios where even if he doesn't get the requisite 60, he stays the Speaker until a new one is elected. I still think that there's the great possibility that he will be indicted. Remember that his four of his closest confidants, his number one closest confidant has been indicted. You still have the indictment of Ed Burke, the longest serving alderman in Illinois history in Chicago. And unfortunately, the person that I think was giving some information that would be very important, Martin Sandoval, who already had pled guilty, passed this last week, very tragically from COVID. But I understand that the feds have gotten a lot of information from Marty before he passed. And I think that the Speaker, rather than worrying about being Speaker of the House, maybe he should be looking at whether or not he's going to get indicted.
And finally, this came up yesterday when I was speaking with Dr. Austin Lane from SIU, the chancellor yesterday. The question for you this morning on the same subject that I received at Dr. Lane yesterday, the prospect of a law enforcement training school at SIU. The question for you this morning from one of our listeners is, would you support law enforcement training school at SIU?
Yes. In fact, that was the brainchild of Carlo Montemagno, and I'm very happy to hear that Chancellor Lane is trying to move forward with that. As higher education, you know, we have nine public universities in Illinois. There are two that are university systems, U of I and SIU. That makes them very unique in the whole matrix of higher education in Illinois. And the fact is that whether you're a small university or a university system like U of I or SIU, you have to be finding that niche. And U of I has done a really good job of that. SIU has been a little bit late to the game. And so in this case, yes, absolutely, I support that. I think it's, you know, with the largest number of prisons and the law enforcement issues that we have in Southern Illinois, and the ability to draw from our populace, it's a magnificent idea, and I support it wholeheartedly.
It's interesting because some of the other people have been chiming in going, yeah, you know, we got to send our police officers to Edwardsville. The cost in and of itself is a problem because of the distance involved.
One of the other issues that came up was about 2 years ago, there was a change in a fee that's charged at the courthouses. And that fee was actually going to the mobile training units. Those mobile training units, instead of having to go to Springfield, you know, to go to the academy for your training, the mobile training units went around to each of these small communities and did the training. That funding is no longer there. And I remember it was like a 11 o'clock at night hearing, and I'm the spokesperson for Jude Krim, and it came through that committee. So as the ranking Republican, I said, how are you going to pay for the mobile training units? And the answer was, oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We'll find a way to fund them. Well, here we are more than a year down the road, and they being the Pritzker administration, still hasn't found an ability to fund those mobile training units. So if you're not going to have the mobile training units, if you're not going to have that funding, then at the very least, allow us to have a training facility in this part of the state that will get our folks trained. Plus, it will train them to go into a field that is greatly needed right now. And obviously, you know, we do have some issues with law enforcement around the state and around the country. And I think this would give people the ability to have greater support of law enforcement and, you know, and really have a better a better feel for the great job that they do.
You know what's interesting? When I was listening, as I came to a kind of a quick conclusion on my part, there's more than one way to defund the police.
Oh, that's absolutely correct. It's just by, you know, you don't have to defund them, just don't fund them.
Right.
Like, you know, some legislators and congressmen, whatever, they don't want to have a vote on saying, oh, let's take, you know, let's don't fund them. But they just gradually defund all the little programs that pay for, you know, for what's going on. There's, you know, you have to have continuing education for law enforcement, and it has to be meaningful education. You know, I served 20 years in the Department of Corrections, and often the training that goes on in the Department of Corrections is, you know, on paper, the training is there, but in reality, the training is not there because the money's not there to do it right. And so if you want to have law enforcement that knows when they're supposed to shoot, that knows when they're supposed to, you know, to use more aggressive techniques and how to use those, then you've got to train them to do it. So I'm hopeful that Chancellor Lane is able to get that accomplished, and I'm going to be doing everything I can to help him affect that.
Before I let you go, when are you going to be sworn in as senator?
January the 13th. In the meantime, just so folks know, we're keeping the Mount Vernon office open. We won't have that. There won't be a person there unless we make an appointment. So I have to try to have a presence over also in the 116th district. So I'll have the Mount Vernon office. As I said earlier, you can always reach us through the Murfreesboro office, 618-684-1100. And then I'm also going to be, we'll have an office. It'll be a campaign office. But we can also do legislative work at that office in Waterloo. But as always, you know, folks can text me. You can reach me through private message. And again, 618-684-1100. And we will be very happy to take your call.